Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The first matter on our morning calendar is the case of Cynthia Padilla versus the Minneapolis Police Department. Counsel, you each have 15 minutes for your oral arguments. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please introduce yourself prior to beginning your oral arguments. And if you need to, the podium can be adjusted according to your height. But you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Sarah McLaren, and I represent the city of Minneapolis. This case is the first time an individual has sought to use a return of property proceeding to gather evidence for a potential subsequent petition for post-conviction relief. As I'll discuss today, the district court erred in releasing the property here because there are two bases that Minnesota statutes require the property to be retained. That is under Minnesota Statute 626.04. First,
that the statute we should be applying here?
Yes, Your Honor. That is the statute governing this proceeding. The first basis under that statute requiring the property to be retained is that the cell phone is being held as potential evidence in the uncharged prosecution of a driver of the shooter's vehicle in the homicide of Jesse Mickelson. The second basis is that Ms. Padilla admitted at the hearing before the district court in this matter that her purpose in recovering the cell phone is to use it to conduct testing on it to potentially use in a subsequent petition for post-conviction relief brought by her brother, who is currently serving a life sentence for the murder of Jesse Mickelson.
What do you think we do with the district court's finding that her cell phone, that the police or your office, the government wasn't holding the cell phone in good faith?
Well, Your Honor, I think...
Is that a factual finding?
Your Honor, it is not. If you look at what the court found, what the court stated, he never said that the government wasn't holding it in good faith. What the court stated was that the facts of this case do not meet the requirements of the exception of Section 626.04A1. Now, that section requires the property to be retained if it's being held in good faith as potential evidence in any matter, charged or uncharged. So if you look at the basis of the court's finding, it relies on the undisputed facts that this evidence is being held in relationship to a murder that took place in 2008. The court found fault with the city's request to retain the property based on undisputed facts, not based on any credibility determinations or based on any disputed facts.
What were those undisputed facts?
The undisputed facts that the court found dispositive were that the property had been held for over 10 years and that the city did not put forth evidence that there was a level of day-to-day investigative efforts that the court believed were necessary to meet the requirements of 626.04A1.
Well, my understanding from the record is that the officer was sitting back at his desk, waiting for someone to say something about who the potential or who the driver might have been.
Well, two things to keep in mind, Your Honor. First,
was that wrong? I mean, that's what I get from the district court's order.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that we know that it's limited to sitting at a desk. Your Honor is correct in that where the case stands now is that the police have information that lead them to believe a certain individual was the driver. They need additional evidence to corroborate that and are in a position where they need to wait for that evidence to come forward. So.
They're not affirmatively or actively pursuing that evidence. They did, as I understand it, and understanding how police investigations go, they did everything they could right after the event to figure out who was involved.
Yes.
They figured out that Jesse Mickelson, or the brother, was involved. and that he was the shooter and there was a driver.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. That is correct. And that level of activity is, there's undisputed evidence in the record that that level of activity is both typical in that you're correct. The police do everything they can at first. Then they're in a position where maybe there's nothing additional they can do in the meantime. They need something additional to come forward. And that works, that does result in prosecutions at some point in the future. And then that is also the level of activity that has been sufficient to find retention to be proper under 626.04A1 in the State v. Tour case. If you look at State v. Tour, what happened there was Mr. Tour...
I'm familiar, but respondents do a pretty good job of distinguishing Tour. And so respond to how they distinguish Tour.
Certainly, absolutely. First, one thing I want to point out is what changed in Tour was the defendant's confession that occurred 20 years later. This was no additional affirmative effort by the police in the interim 20 years. The defendant confessed. Ms. Padilla makes much of the fact that in the Tour case, it was the suspect whose property was being held. Two responses to that. One, 626.04 does not look at the property owner's connection to a crime. That is not the lens that the statute views the property through. Instead, the statute concentrates on whether the property needs to be kept for the purpose of being produced as evidence. The property of any trial, not of the property owner's trial, but any trial. That is what we have here.
But in turn, they didn't have to show good faith, right?
Well, Your Honor...
That wasn't part of the statute then.
Your Honor is correct that the statute was significantly amended post-tour to add both more a detailed procedure of how these proceedings work. And in that procedure, when they listed these exceptions where the district court had to retain the property, that included the words good faith. However, I think it is an odd argument for a respondent to make that prior to those amendments, investigative agencies were permitted to retain property in bad faith or absent bad faith. Instead, the overarching inquiry, which existed both in Tour and exists now in the statute, is the property being held, it may be kept as long as necessary for the purpose of being produced as evidence at any trial.
So what I don't understand is that at the original trial, you would have had this phone, and you'd say, from this phone, we got these records, right? I mean, you don't just hand a cell phone to a jury and have that mean anything. You have to have the information contained in the cell phone.
Certainly. And to speak to that point.
And so the point is that in any subsequent trial, if you ever determine who the driver is, you still have those records.
Yes. And so to clarify that point for Your Honor, I believe you're correct that we still have those records. I believe that what Ms. Padilla is hoping to find is new evidence in the phone that exists in the phone itself that due to technological limitations was unable to be taken from the phone at the time of the trial. So this would not be evidence that we have already.
Although she's invited you to come to any forensic examination of the phone.
I understand that, Your Honor. I am not permitted as a city of Minneapolis to negotiate a testing protocol with her. That is the position of the prosecuting authority, the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, and I am unable to negotiate that protocol. They have repeatedly been directed to that office. They have not availed themselves of that opportunity, presumably because they know they would be asked to go through the post-conviction petition statute.
I'm confused by, as it relates to the same issue, I'm confused by paragraph 12 of the affidavit of the officer who says that Officer Hansen was unable to extract data, but it also says that he used a program to record the images, context, and text messages. I guess I'm not, what's the difference between extracting and recording? Why was he unable to do the former, able to do the latter? And does the the latter, the recording, does that mean that you have all the information that you need electronically?
Your Honor, I believe that this petition is before this court because Ms. Padilla believes there is more information that was not previously gathered from the phone. I am not in a position to either state that is true or untrue from a technological standpoint, but I don't think the court can assume that the city has everything and the prosecution has everything from the phone. Otherwise, we would not have this proceeding because we have offered to buy Ms. Padilla a new phone. She refused that offer. The only purpose of this petition is to conduct testing on the phone. She believes there may be more on that phone. I am not in a position to disbelieve that at this time.
Well, can I just come back to a question that
yes.
That Judge Riley asked you earlier, and that's with regard to a factual finding of good faith, because that is what the exception was that the court dealt with, and the court gave a number of reasons for his ruling, or the judge gave a number of reasons for his ruling, and they all seem to go to that good faith element. I mean, he doesn't say, the order doesn't say good faith, but they seem to be with regard to whether this is being held in good faith for a future crime. And that seems to be the essence of the order. I guess I didn't understand your response to Judge Riley.
Certainly, I'll do my best to clarify. I think if you look at what the court found, he essentially found that an investigative agency cannot hold a piece of property indefinitely and have that be good faith. He felt there's an expiration date on 626.04.
Well, no, he goes further than that, though, because if you look at the last reason, he said that, well, they conceded the police have been unable to develop a case, there's no plan to develop a case, and in fact, there's no active or even remotely active investigation. That's way beyond just the fact that's not a finding necessarily that, you know, you can't hold it indefinitely. He basically said they're holding it and they're doing nothing. And I think the transcript kind of supports that finding because he expressed his displeasure, I think, in the transcript when the officer said we plan to hold it forever and we're doing nothing. So,
certainly, Your Honor. And recognizing that in these cases there's no statute of limitations, that was the basis of our offer to buy Ms. Padilla a replacement phone, recognizing that that imposition that could make on her. However, to address the court's question regarding good faith, I think the same argument could have been made about the state's efforts in the Tour case, because they even had a prior confession. They did nothing with it. It was from 1981. They didn't do anything with it. 22 years later, when there's yet another jailhouse confession from Mr. Tour, that's when they finally prosecute him. So here, for the court to read into 626.04, a requirement that investigative agencies have to do some level of day-to-day investigative activities in homicide cases where you are waiting for some evidence to corroborate existing information goes far beyond the plain language of the statute. It goes far beyond the Supreme Court's guidance in Tour, and it goes and it flies in the face of investigative realities in these types of cases. So I don't believe that when you look at those undisputed facts and apply them to the statute, that should be viewed as a factual finding, and that is based on the State v. Minnesota School of Business case from the Supreme Court, which stated that a de novo standard of review applies to statutory of interpretation when you're applying it to undisputed facts. Here, there's no dispute as to what the police are doing or not doing. This court's job is to determine whether or not some additional activity is required in order for retention to be appropriate under the plain language of
but
the statute.
Are you claiming then that good faith, that we can review that on a de novo basis? Isn't that a factual finding?
I think if the court had made a credibility determination, if the court had been faced with a factual dispute that it had to resolve, that would definitely be a factual finding. Here, there are no factual findings. There are undisputed facts. The parties agree what the facts are. And the court had a different reading of the statute than the Supreme Court has in State v. Tour.
And you don't think the facts are sufficient in that the judge basically said, you're doing nothing, therefore, and it's been, you've had it for 10 years, you have no plan, and I don't think it's credible. I mean, doesn't that seem to indicate he didn't think it was credible that they were actively using it or going to use it?
I think the judge...
charge someone else?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Yeah.
I think the judge definitely believed that the city should not be able to hold the phone absent day-to-day investigative activities in this type of situation. I don't think that's what the statute requires.
Well, and I think you're going too far with that, too, because the judge never said, I need proof of day-to-day activities. The judge basically said, you've given me nothing. You've had 10 years. He didn't require day-to-day, and those are pretty strong statements from the judge.
If I may address that one point.
Yes, please.
One thing I do want to point out is I did request to the court to be heard ex parte, as the court is required to do under the statute, to detail investigative status, and the court denied that request. So that also limited our opportunity to make a record of investigative efforts.
Is that denial in the record?
It's in the transcript, Your Honor. He said he would strike the affidavit if I attempted to be heard ex parte.
I thought he was going to strike the affidavit if you objected to the examination of the officer.
No, Your Honor. I asked that we be heard ex parte if it got into investigative efforts as was permitted under the statute, and he said he would strike the affidavit in that instance.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Lauren Weber, appearing on behalf of respondent Cynthia Padilla. Respondent respectfully requests that this court affirm the district court's order requiring the City of Minneapolis Police Department return her personal property, a cell phone, SIM card, and battery that were seized in the underlying investigation of the murder of Jesse Mickelson. The district court correctly ordered the return of Ms. Padilla's cell phone for two significant reasons. First, the district court correctly found that the city had failed to demonstrate that it was holding the cell phone in good faith as potential evidence in the murder of Jesse Mickelson. Second, the city's reliance on Ms. Padilla's reasons for why she wanted return of the cell phone are irrelevant. Minnesota Statute 626.04 has no requirement that a petitioner seeking return of property is required to demonstrate why it wants that property, and it shouldn't be taken into consideration when the seizing authority here at the City of Minneapolis is determining whether or not it has a good faith basis to retain that property.
Well, let me ask you this, because we're talking 22 years, mm-hmm. and the court seemed to be okay with that. Why is this case different?
Sure, Your Honor. Tour is distinguishable for multiple reasons. The first being that I believe, as this court has recognized, that it was applying a version of Minnesota Statute 626.04 that didn't have that good faith requirement. In fact, it didn't have the exception at all with regards to that the city essentially has the burden, or the seizing party has the burden, to demonstrate that it's maintaining the property or holding the property in good faith as potential evidence. So there was no requirement that, or factual finding of good faith in that case, that is helpful to the analysis here, in which the court was required to find good faith and the city was required to show it. The case is further distinguishable in that Tour actually didn't make an affirmative request for the return of his property. It was after the conviction on appeal he indicated that there was error in the city's retention of the property for that long of a time. Also noteworthy is that the property that was being held did belong to defendant. It was seized with regards to a murder that happened 22 years previously, for which Tur was the main suspect because of a prior jailhouse confession 20 years ago, and for which he had yet to be tried for. So he was a suspect in the investigation and he hadn't been tried. I would point out that the city has not pointed to any legal authority or case law in which the seizing authority can indefinitely hold property of a non-party, essentially, not a defendant, not a co-defendant, not a suspect, even after the exhaustion of the main defendant's appeal, and essentially indefinitely without establishing that good faith basis.
It's also no case law saying that they can't, right?
Correct, Your Honor. However, that doesn't negate the city's responsibility to demonstrate that it's holding the evidence or the property in good faith as potential evidence.
So was there a finding here about good faith?
Yes, Your Honor.
District Court did not use the words good faith, did it?
I believe the District Court indicated that there wasn't evidence in the record to meet that good faith.
Didn't say the words good. I mean, it shouldn't be difficult. The District Court should be able to say the city is holding this in good faith or the city is not holding this in good faith. It seems to me the District Court dodged the issue, never addressed it.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I would disagree that the court didn't address it because the court focused on the facts available to it in the record regarding the 10 years that had passed since the crime, the fact that Mr. Barrientos-Quintana's appeals had expired, that there was no active investigation, that they couldn't develop a case for the Hennepin County Attorney's Office. In fact, you know, I would point your attention to addendum at 12, in which Sergeant Gators admits that he's just waiting for something to develop. So the district court focused on all of these facts, which would go towards this good faith requirement that the city was holding this as potential evidence.
But those facts are not in and of themselves good faith, right? I mean, I agree. A judge could say, from these facts, I find that property is not being held in good faith, but the district court never said that. I'm just questioning. I'm not assuming that there is a finding of no good faith.
Your Honor, in response to that, I would direct your attention to page 3 of the order when the court says that the facts of this case do not meet the requirements of the exception in section 626.04A1, and that exception is that there's no good faith, that there's a demonstration of good faith that the property is being held as potential evidence. So while the district court may not have explicitly used the word good faith, we certainly read that order and interpret that order as the facts that follow being the facts that the court relied on in finding that that exception was not met.
Or another way to look at it is that the court believe that there's other requirements in that provision of the statute, requirements about length of time, requirements about whether the investigation is active or not, and so on, and that could be an error of law that, you know, by it basically imposing requirements that do not exist in the statute.
Your Honor, I would respond by saying that if that was the interpretation, but those are the only facts that were presented at the hearing from Sergeant Gators in support of the fact that they were retaining the cell phone as potential evidence here. Those were the facts that the district court had to go from. While yes, you know, in some regards, if the court was requiring those as elements that you had to meet, or if there was a timing level requirement or a requirement of day-to-day activity in an investigation, that would be reading more into the statute, but short of those types of facts, I don't know what else the district court would have necessarily looked at in making that assessment of good faith. And while we're talking about this concept of reading more into the statute, the city's position, ongoing position, that the reason why Ms. Padilla wants her phone back should be taken into consideration is also adding a requirement into the statute that isn't there. Ms. Padilla had no requirement to say why she wanted her phone back or what she was going to use it for, but that because she did, the city is using it against her as a reason to say that this must be some sort of post-conviction motion that needs to be heard under Minnesota Statute 590.91. I would direct the court's attention in that regard to the Shogun Mankato versus Commissioner of Revenue case, in which the court was very explicit about not adding terms into Minnesota Statute 626.04, in which case the party was trying to allege a violation of Fourth Amendment rights under the umbrella of 62604 for a seizure, and the court said that the statute doesn't apply for that cause of action, and you can't add terms into the statute that aren't there. The same should apply here with regards to this idea that why Ms. Padilla wants her phone back for testing or for otherwise should be taken into consideration. The burden is on the city of Minneapolis to determine that it's holding this property in good faith as potential evidence in the murder of Jesse Mickelson.
Do you believe the officer was holding the evidence in bad faith?
No, Your Honor, and I don't know if those facts are in the record, but it's not our burden to show that they're holding the phone in bad faith. I would say that
do you think that the officer did not genuinely believe that there was value in holding the evidence for the possibility, however remote, that sometime down the road some other, you know, the investigation might be reactivated? Do you think the officer was not credible in that assertion?
Your Honor, I'm not in a place to assess the sergeant's credibility with regards to the investigation. However, I think there are two.
I'm asking your position. I mean, whether that is not a credible statement by him, and whether that was somehow part of the district court's reasoning.
I think, Your Honor, if you look to the city's respondent's request to involve the city in any subsequent testing that would allow them to maintain the integrity of the evidence, the cell phone, for any future potential trial or any future potential post-conviction motion, as they are making the argument, and they denied that request, I think that goes towards an intent to maintain the property indefinitely, regardless of having to show good faith. If the city was truly just concerned with maintaining the integrity of the evidence because it could potentially be used against this co-defendant at some trial, it would have no problem in participating in the testing that we are requesting as a middle ground. And so the failure to do that actually shows an intent to hold it indefinitely. The city continues to articulate this, the standard, and they articulate it in their reply brief, that so long as there is an open investigation into the murder of Jesse Mickelson, look at the co-defendant isn't prosecuted, they are entitled to hold the phone. That's a different standard than Minnesota Statute 62604 requires. It ignores good faith, and it arguably makes a newer, lower bar for the city to meet. So long as they say that there is an open investigation, that there's no requirement to show any connection. And what's lacking here is any connection and any evidence in the record indicating what the cell phone could possibly do in a prosecution of this co-defendant. There's no facts in the record regarding that other than they're holding the phone indefinitely and essentially they're waiting for someone to come in to further the co-defendant case. But absent that information, the city is saying essentially that this different standard applies to them. The city has also since argued that it is undisputed somehow that the cell phone would be evidence against the co-defendant, and I would just address that briefly by saying that our brief actually indicates that there's no connection, nor is there any facts in the record to say that we have agreed on that position. Moving quickly to Minnesota Statute 590.01, which is what the city believes should apply here, I have addressed the issue that there is no requirement that reason be taken into consideration with regards to this property request. And in that regard, Ms. Padilla falls squarely within the statutory language of Minnesota Statute 62604. She's proven that she's the property owner, and the city has not met its burden. To require an explanation of our reasoning and what we intend to do impermissibly shifts the burden or deflects from the city's burden to show this good faith requirement. In fact, if you were to accept the city's argument here, it would allow the seizing authority to even assume or guess moving forward that any evidence requested involving a crime could be used as a potential post-conviction evidence in a post-conviction motion. So the city is arguing that because this is potential evidence in a subsequent post-conviction motion, it has good faith to hold it because it's evidence. But that would allow the seizing authority to essentially assume that every request for evidence would be or could be used in a post-conviction motion and allow the seizing authority here in the city to retain evidence, essentially, for every matter and deny every request for property, which essentially eviscerates the need and the necessity of Minnesota Statute 626.04. It also serves as an untimely objection to a future potential post-conviction hearing. This is not a petition for post-conviction relief. Ms. Padilla cannot bring that motion on behalf of her brother. It's simply to return the property, and what Ms. Padilla wants to do with that property isn't of consequence. That it is for testing matters only from the perspective that we aren't saying that this is a post-conviction relief or that there is one even possibly that could come from this. If and when that is to happen, the city is more than happy or is more than able to object to that evidence at that hearing at that time. However, their unwillingness to participate in this project in order to preserve the quality of this evidence and the integrity of this evidence actually shows the intent to prevent and prohibit Mr. Barrientos Quintana from bringing a post-conviction hearing based on this cell phone.
Is this, and I'm looking at the language, potential evidence in any matter, charged or uncharged. That's pretty broad language. Are you arguing that that does not include the possibility it could be potential evidence in a post-conviction proceeding?
No, Your Honor, not necessarily. I think it could be evidence in a post-conviction hearing, but I would point to the facts here that the city has all the data. The city has admitted that they've pulled all the data from the cell phone and hasn't argued why the cell phone data would be relevant to a post-conviction hearing.
Well, I guess I'm not, because as I understand it, there was at least a representation made that there may be some new testing of the phone that can be done now that couldn't have been done 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that apparently your client will be looking at that, mm-hmm. that new testing. And the purpose of that would be to obtain post-conviction relief, possibly. Mm-hmm. I mean, does that put it in within the phrase potential evidence in any matter, charged or uncharged?
I see I'm out of time, if I may briefly respond.
Yes.
I would argue that because this is Mrs. Padilla's property and there isn't the good faith basis as potential evidence in the murder at this point in the record, that the appropriate procedure by which to contest a post-conviction relief would be too broad of a reading of 626.04 to say that it governed every single motion for potential post-conviction relief, because I think the problem from that would stem would be that all returns of property could be denied on that basis without any other showing. While it could be potentially used as evidence in a post-conviction relief, if that was read into that, I don't see an avenue in which the property would actually be returned. So in conclusion, the city of Minneapolis has failed to meet its burden under the Minnesota Statute 626.04a to show that they are withholding Ms. Padilla's cell phone in good faith as potential evidence in the murder of Jesse Mickelson. Ms. Padilla's reasons are irrelevant to that analysis. She falls squarely within that statute, and this court should affirm the district court's order.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, Ms. Padilla is arguing that returning the property here will result in a much broader rule than it actually would. What we have here is not a situation where someone is trying to get their property back, and there is no evidence of any intent to use that evidence in a future proceeding, such as a post-conviction proceeding. Here we have a very different case, where we have an admission on the record by Ms. Padilla that her sole intent that we know of for this property is to use it as the basis for future post-conviction relief. Now, that future relief can include, it's right in Section 590.01, Subdivision 1, a new trial. So that itself
is the future proceeding, charged or uncharged, referenced in 626.04A1 that would require, be a separate basis to require the court to permit the city to retain this evidence. Now I'm hearing Ms. Padilla argue not so much that Sergeant Gator's, there was a finding that the city was acting in bad faith, but that the city's unwillingness to engage in just voluntary testing of the evidence is somehow evidence of bad faith. I want to make the record very clear. The city will not be representing the state at any petition for post-conviction relief. The sole mechanism under Minnesota statutes for post-conviction forensic testing of evidence is under the post-conviction relief statute. Given those realities, the city cannot negotiate a testing protocol, and should a post-conviction relief petition happen later, the city will not be at that hearing. It will be Hennepin County. So I don't want the city's inability to negotiate testing to be somehow now viewed as a lack of good faith on the part of the prosecution.
I have a question. Sorry, go ahead.
At the district court level, it seems that you relied on exception one.
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you relying on any other exceptions in your appeal?
No, Your Honor. I believe both.
Footnote.
And I apologize for any confusion that caused, but I believe both of the reasons present here fall under section one.
Thank you.
I had a procedural question. What did the parties submit written briefs or memoranda along with this issue, or was everything argued orally on the record?
Your Honor, this proceeding, it says right in the statutes, is an informal proceeding, so I will do it differently going forward. I didn't put in a formal brief in advance of the hearing. After the hearing, we did do post-hearing written submissions, and in that submission is when the city directly raised the issue that this should go through 590 and that a petitioner's intent to bring a post-conviction petition based on the evidence gathered from the cell phone is itself a basis for the property to be retained under 626.04. So those arguments were submitted in writing to the district court prior to the district court's decision. In the time I have left, I just want to clarify, too, that all the data has not been pulled from the cell phone. The city is not constantly pulling data from property it's holding based on new emerging technologies. At the time of Respondent's brother's murder trial, the data was pulled they could get then, and the city continued to hold the phone. Now we understand, based on petitioner's representations, there may be new technology to pull additional data the city does not have. That is why the city is concerned that should this property be released prior to it being used in a post-conviction relief petition, that could compromise the integrity of the evidence. So that is the basis of the city's concern.
You said that the judge denied you the opportunity to have an ex parte hearing. And I'm looking at the transcript where it's on page 3 where the judge says, I'm going to strike his affidavit. It's that simple. Either she gets to question him about the stuff in the affidavit or I'll strike it. And so then there's questioning about what's contained in the affidavit. And then I do see in the statute, the court shall allow, if requested, the custodian to summarize the status and progress of the ongoing investigation can be done ex parte. But given the fact that the witness then goes on to say, I'm not doing anything, I'm just wondering what would come out in an ex parte, hypothetically.
Certainly, Your Honor. What I anticipate, and I'll just have to be somewhat circumspect in what I state on the record, what I anticipate would come out was the existing evidence as to the identity of the shooter, or excuse me, of the driver, the basis of that evidence. Any efforts the police had made as to attempts to corroborate that evidence, and any individuals that they were watching to see if they came into custody, to see if they could get additional corroboration through an in-custody interview.
In reading the transcript, though, through to the end, I don't see that the city ever made that request then to follow up with the ex parte.
Your Honor, I agree that there was no follow-up. I perhaps inartfully requested it on page 3 of the transcript, but that is the extent of the request. So the city's position is that was a request, but the transcript is what it is, Your Honor.
Thank you.
In conclusion, the city respectfully requests that the district court's judgment ordering the city to return the cell phone, SIM card, and battery be reversed and set aside, and that judgment be entered in the city's favor in all respects.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Oh, yes.
And I'm going to ask you the same question I ask the respondent. Does the fact that there was at least a representation made that there may be some additional testing of the cell phone once it's returned, does that implicate the phrase that the property is being held in good faith as potential evidence in any matter, charged or uncharged?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that is, and as I've attempted to express to the court this morning, that is the second basis we believe that requires the court to permit the city to hold the property, is the petitioner has essentially created her own future proceeding, potentially, in which this evidence would be relevant.
Any other questions? All right, thank you. We appreciate that it was well-briefed and argued, and we will proceed to get an order out within the statutory period of time. And I also would like to, I understand we have some students that are here. I want to welcome you, and I do want to tell you, you picked a good argument to come to the today. So anyway, and I do appreciate the parties. Assistance in helping us decide this case. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next matter on this morning's